Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the largest segment of society, to those who know that political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions far and wide, even those that you may have previously shown allegiance to, are corrupt. They are absolutely counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to join us in this presentation, is 877-376-45. Well, it happened yesterday. It was not a surprise, and that almost all of the polls had the no to independence percentage of Scotland's voters, leading those saying yes to independence by about 4%, 52-48. That was always interesting that every one of these polls said that the numbers were 52% for staying with the union, 48% opposed, with 4% undecided. Not a math major, but that doesn't seem to add up to me. Nonetheless, the numbers that I've read in today's newspaper say that the anti-separation group won by 10%, 55-45. I'm honestly disappointed, obviously not surprised. I am partly Scottish, and I have studied, and we won't go over the history this morning, but because we did yesterday, of the United Kingdom. I think it is reprehensible. And their treatment of Scotland over the last three centuries has been abysmal. But the Scottish, unfortunately, are amongst many people who politically have chosen dependence. They have chosen the opposite of what Yahweh has encouraged. God wants us to walk away from our government, to not be dependent upon it, but to be dependent upon Him. And yet in Scotland, it has become a welfare mentality, entitlements. And the Scottish feared independence because that would make them accountable and responsible, and they didn't have the backbone anymore. So they chose to continue the alliance with the UK because the UK bribed them. And that's the bottom line. The UK said, okay, yeah, we haven't treated you very well. Okay, yeah, you know, maybe the relationship has been one-sided. Okay, maybe we've been more oppressors than we have been associates. But we're going to change all that, and they made all sorts of concessions, literally bribes, to win that vote. Now, the problem, of course, is the rest of the UK is saying, wait a minute, you know, why don't we threaten independence so that our lot in the UK improves as well? And the issue there is that the UK has an independent currency and therefore has to be fiscally responsible. If the UK debt was at the same level as America's debt in reference to its GDP, America's debt is now 110% of gross domestic product. America wouldn't even be allowed to sniff participation in the European Union or the euro because our debt is way out of line, too high. But as a reserve currency, America can get by with it. At least it can prolong its demise. That is not the case with the UK. The pound is not a reserve currency. And so with the UK debt being between 60 and 65% of GDP, they had to curtail spending. They had to pull in the reins of the welfare state. But the Scottish didn't like that, which is why they called for the referendum in the first place. And so to keep them as part of the union, the Brits promised for Scotland to do the very thing that will bring down the entirety of the UK, which is to continue the welfare state and the dependence mentality. That is what happened in Scotland. It is a shame that security trumps freedom. It's what's happened in America. It's what's happening throughout Europe. We shouldn't be surprised that it's happening in Scotland. People worldwide are giving up their freedom for the pretense of security. And it's, as I say, it's happening around the world. This mythical war on terror, where you give up your freedoms when you allow your government to search your emails, to search your telephone calls, to spy on you in every possible way, to search you as you try to board an airplane, to constrain your travel, to take your money to support a military state. All of that is giving up freedom for the pretense of security. That is what happened in Scotland. Iran's latest crackdown is one that we should consider. And normally we would just say, okay, it's Iran. They're a fundamentalist Islamic country that's a bunch of religious wackos. What does that have to do with us? Well, it has a lot to do with us, because now the Obaminator has committed American troops and America's military to Iran to wipe out the only tangible threat to that country. The Islamic State exists primarily as a threat to Shiite Iran. That's its principal target. And so when the United States says that it commits to engage in a war against the Islamic State, it is fighting on behalf of Shiite Iran. So now it is our business. Their latest crackdown on freedom includes 91 lashes. That's right to the point of death. That would be permanently disfiguring, scarring, mutilating, and unless doled out over a prolonged period of time, deadly. 91 lashes. To the seven young people who posted a video of themselves dancing to the pop hit Happy. And a death sentence for the blogger accused of insulting the Prophet Muhammad. Now, I don't know how you insult Muhammad. You call him a pedophile. That's not insulting him, because it's what he did. In fact, he wasn't just an occasional pedophile. He made a life out of being a pedophile. He didn't just have a sexual relation with a six-year-old girl when he was 50. He had many children that were part of his harem. So you call him a pedophile. Obviously, it can't be an insult, because in the Hadith, Muhammad says that Allah revealed to him that Aisha, at 6 years old, when he was 50, was his to take sexually. So if it's Allah's idea, acknowledging it certainly couldn't be an insult. Calling Muhammad a rapist isn't an insult, because Muhammad didn't just rape one woman. There are three different women who he not only raped once, but raped over the remaining periods of their lives after he murdered their fathers, murdered their husbands, murdered their sons, and sold their daughters into slavery. And in the Hadith, Muhammad's rapist behavior is regaled. Muhammad actually doled out women on a game of lots after he got the first pick, to encourage Muslims to be jihadists and to act as terrorists. Rape was a prize. The Quran condones rape. It says that sex with captives, with slaves, is okay. Now, in one place it says, you know, don't force your slaves to be prostitutes. But if you do, Allah is forgiving. So calling Muhammad a rapist can't be insulting. You can't call Muhammad a terrorist and insult him. He led 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era. But that isn't an insult, because Muhammad said, I have become victorious with terror. Allah claims to be a co-conspirator in the perpetration of terror in the Quran. So calling Muhammad a ruthless terrorist isn't an insult. Calling Muhammad a liar wouldn't be an insult, because he acknowledges in the Quran that he breaches his vows. The Quran even says a treaty between Muslims and non-Muslims is not binding on the Muslims, all to absolve Muhammad of the written treaty that he made with the Meccans that he reneged on before the ink was dry. Kidnapping, calling Muhammad a kidnapper who engaged in ransom, can't be an insult, because Muhammad not only did it, but he had a Quran surah revealed in the immediate aftermath of the first time that he engaged in kidnap for ransom, with Allah saying that he participated, that he supported kidnap for ransom. If you call Muhammad a slave trader, you're not insulting him, because the Quran condones the enslavement of women and children for the purpose of funding Islam. There is really nothing you can say about Muhammad that would be an insult to him. In fact, if you were to say that the Prophet Muhammad wasn't a prophet, even that wouldn't be an insult, because Muhammad himself said, I've been given no miracles. I cannot predict the future. I cannot perform a miracle. It's affirmed in the Quran. And he never got a single prophecy right. I don't know what you could say about Muhammad that would be insulting. Honestly, I mean, he was the most repulsive man who ever lived. Certainly the most disgusting human ever to claim to speak for God. And absolutely the most repulsive man who is believed to have spoken for God. So to be sentenced for death for insulting Muhammad, I don't know how you do. I guess you could insult Muhammad by saying he was a swell guy. That would be insulting, because he made a career of being just the opposite. The thief, a pedophile, a rapist. He was even incestuous. Kidnapper, slave trader, ruthless terrorist, mass murderer. The 7 men and women were arrested in May, but then released after a self-professed moderate president. That's so funny. They even put in quotes, self-professed moderate. President Hassan Rouhani tweeted that the regime should lighten up. It is, it's just mind-boggling that when Rouhani was running for election and won, he was presented in every major media periodical as being a moderate, and how that showed that Iran was changing from the Ahmadinejad regime. And yet, if you look at Rouhani, he was the focus of the rally that brought the Ayatollah Khomeini back to Iran. He was his trusted lieutenant when he was in France, and he led the revival of Shia Islam in Iran, fanned the flames of Islamic hatred that created the environment that brought him back. He was then a defense minister during the Iran-Iraq war, hardly a moderate. He then ran interference for the Iranian nuclear program that has a singular purpose, a nuclear bomb. And yet he was presented as moderate. The group was forced, nonetheless, to apologize on television and to endure a trial in which they were convicted and each sentenced to 91 lashes. One was even given a full year in prison, while the others got 6 months, although their attorney said the sentences might be suspended. 91 lashes. Their crime was dancing. It wasn't lewd. They were fully dressed. They weren't saying anything. They weren't promoting anything. They were just dancing And here's a government, a religious government, and that's the problem with religion, a religious government so whacked out, so fundamentally Islamic, so repulsive. They were imprisoning and lashing. 91 lashes. That's enough to kill most people. These boys and girls, because they were dancing. It is pathetic. The verdict was presented against these boys and girls. Against an upswelling of international outcry, where people around the world who still have some semblance of sanity said, you know, just don't do this. But no, the judicial system in Iran is based on Sharia law. Having fun is not allowed. Dancing is not allowed. If you're going to celebrate something in Iran, it darn well better be killing. If you're going to celebrate something in Iran, it has to be a jihadist victory. No music, no fun, no dancing. Life will be miserable because you are a Muslim. The video was part of a global campaign launched by the pop star Pharrell Williams and was viewed by more than 100,000 people on YouTube. The six who appeared on the video and a man who shot the footage apologized and said they had been tricked into doing it. After the confession, they were released on bail. We can accept the verdict or appeal, these boys and girls said. Meanwhile, the ultimate penalty was handed down to Shohel Arabi, a blogger found guilty of insulting the Prophet Muhammad on his postings on Facebook. The International Campaign for Human Rights in Iran reported that Arabi will be able to appeal the decision, but to the same justices ruling on the same perverted legal system called Sharia. Revolutionary Guard agents arrested Arabi and his wife last November. Arabi's wife was released, but Arabi was kept in solitary confinement inside the notorious Ibn prison before being found guilty of Shab al-Nabi, insulting the Prophet. By the way, Nabi, this great Quran that claims to be in pure Arabic. Well, Nabi, Prophet, is a Hebrew word. Even Quran is a Hebrew word. It's from the Hebrew kara. It means to read and to recite. Everything about Islam is a lie. Everything about Islam is perverted. Everything about Islam is uncivilized. It needs to be made illegal, to be declared reprehensible, and to be quarantined before it continues to bludgeon innocents. During the break, Scott announced that he was a self-proclaimed genius, so I figured a little science might be the more appropriate next story. And there is a major announcement in science. A team of astronomers, not one, but a team. So these are the new NFL players union, I'm sure, is going to represent them, has made a rare find in a dwarf galaxy. Now, what is a dwarf galaxy? You know, the average galaxy is 100 billion stars. Milky Way is 400 billion stars, like our sun. A dwarf galaxy, you know, what is that like? Well, this one's 500 times smaller than Milky Way, so I guess about 8 billion stars. 8 billion stars. I mean, calling a sun a dwarf, it's kind of funny when you consider how massive a sun is, a star is. But there's now 8 billion of them, and that is a dwarf galaxy. It gives you an idea as to how big the universe is when a galaxy with 8 billion stars like our sun is a dwarf. This galaxy, it really does have a sexy name, a name that would appeal, I think, to intellectuals like our program director, Scott. It is M60-UCD1. And the reason it is... Yeah, it's one of my favorites, too. It's got a catchy name. It has a supermassive black hole in it. And for those who may be wondering what the difference is between a black hole and a supermassive black hole, Scott, I'm sure with your elevated IQ, you would know the answer to this. How many times more massive than our sun must a black hole be to be considered a big whopper of black holes?
Man, you know, it just isn't my area of expertise. I mean, okay, I'm self-proclaimed. I haven't done any tests yet.
Okay, it's 1 million times is the answer. And this particular black hole, M60 UCD1, is 21 million times more massive than our sun. Now, there is a really nice picture as the lead to this CBS story on the supermassive black hole. It looks really cool. It's a picture of a black hole. And you might say, well, did the Hubble telescope, which found the supermassive black hole, did it snap a picture of it? And, of course, the answer to that is no. You can't shoot a picture, and one cannot see a black hole. So it was really nice. An artist drew us a picture that has a lot of little dots of white dots and a black background that represent stars. I don't know if they counted. And drew 8 billion dots, but nonetheless, there are a bunch of dots of varying size that represent the stars all surrounding a black circle. And that is our illustration.
This is so funny. This is so stupid.
Of the supermassive black hole. But they made news because this is the first time that a dwarf galaxy has been able to muster a big whopper, super daddy of black holes. And that is very, very exciting.
It is not the last time, the first artist rendition, though. Every time I finish a sentence, a lot of times I end it with a black hole. I just put that little period down. And
yeah, put that little period at the end of it.
There you go.
Oh, because the small galaxy is so compact and dense, the view from inside would be spectacular, scientists say. Any inhabitants, should they exist, would see at least 1 million stars in the night sky compared to, guess how many stars are visible from Earth. This says 4,000. 4,000 is what they say are stars that are visible from Earth. You know, Yahweh asked Abram, or encouraged Abram, says, you know, look up in the sky and count the stars if you can, those that you can see. And he said, your offspring, you know, they will be more numerous than those stars that you can see. 4,000 seems sparse. I thought the number was larger of stars we can see. But 4,000 is about the number of covenant children that are direct descendants of Abraham that will be harvested this coming in Teruah, probably in 2026. Next week we will be celebrating Teruah, and we'll have a program devoted to it. So there is our moment of Zen in the sun for those of you who share Scott's superior intellect. On the medical front. Self-proclaimed. Okay. Self-proclaimed. Now, on the medical front, Scott, this might be more up your alley. The United Nations Security Council, no longer the World Health Organization, the UN Security Council has weighed in, and they have declared, and so it must be true, that the outbreak of the Ebola virus in West Africa is a threat to international peace and security. Now, I don't know how 2,600 people dying, even of a horrible death, in countries almost all hugely impoverished, represents a threat to international peace and security. Unless their plan is to export Ebola so that it infects people worldwide. But 2,600 people dying, and it's a terrible death, I'll give you that. It's a horrible disease, I'll give you that. But 2,600 people dying and 5,000 people being infected, folks, is not a threat to international peace and security. The council unanimously adopted the resolution. Oh, then I stand corrected. It must be true. Calling on states to provide more resources to combat the outbreak. Oh, it's always about money, isn't it? UN Security Council Ban Ki-moon warned an emergency meeting of the council that the number of Ebola infections was doubling every 3 weeks. It's true. Ebola is run amok. That's all true. And that while there's 2,600 people that have died, the best estimate for the total number that will succumb to this horrible disease is about 20,000.
Well, the great thing that we have on our side here, Craig,
yes,
is that we have an ocean between us and this outbreak of Ebola. And I mean,
that we're bridging with 3,000 U.S.
troops.
The
only way that we could ever, you know, be affected by this is if we would bring it here. You know,
we would never do that. We wouldn't be flying planes every day bringing infected Ebola patients back. And we most certainly wouldn't send 3,000 people who have no freedom in the U.S. military over there to be human barricades for the disease. Now, we wouldn't do something like that.
And then the other thing is for me personally, I'm in Minnesota. There's no way. I mean, you'd have to fly somebody here that had it, you know. In order for me to have any
way. And I thought that the first person that came to America with Ebola was released in Minnesota.
What?
Yes. What? Yes, indeed. What? Be careful. If I were you, don't go outside. Don't touch anybody. Mr. Ban said that the gravity and the scale of the situation now require a level of international action unprecedented for a health emergency. So let me just make sure I understand this. Over 100 million people die of the flu, which, by the way, was spread the same way that I guess the Obaminator plans to spread Ebola worldwide through the U.S. military. And it killed 100 million people in the aftermath of World War I. And this now is the greatest health emergency in world history. Don't think for a moment that the 100 million people are more important than the 2,600. Don't do the math. We don't want to be rational, because being rational would mean that we would start to question everything, including the United Nations. And by the way, I wouldn't want to compare this to the Black Death, where one out of every three people and huge swaths of Europe died, nor the various attacks of plague that killed massive numbers of people all the way from about 200 CE through the about 700-800 CE. Let's not compare that either.
And what about smallpox? Wasn't that pretty devastating?
Oh, absolutely. And what about HIV in Africa and AIDS? No, this 2,600 deaths, that's a lot of people. 20,000, of course, is even more, and that's the number that it's likely to be. But come on, keep things. If you make statements that are routinely irrational, somewhere along the way, well, the writer for this periodical, who got his journalistic degree, obviously was unable to hold the UN accountable for their stupidity. But somewhere along the way, you know, you're going to trip into some person that's going to say, no, that's really stupid. And rather than elevating people's concern, rather than drawing attention to a problem, you're just going to get mocked. And that's the case here. Anyway, Mr. Bon said that the establishment of an emergency UN mission working with the World Health Organization to combat the crisis was absolutely necessary. Now, I'll tell you about a disease. I'll tell you about a malignancy that is the most relentless, the most devastating, the most deadly, the most destructive in all of human history. And that disease is Islam. Islamic State fighters, who I will here affirm are Islamic, which is why they call themselves the Islamic State, besieged a Kurdish city in northern Syria on Thursday after seizing 21 villages in a major assault. Yes, it didn't take long for the Islamic State to demonstrate the obvious, that the Obamanator's call to arms, which the Republicans all rallied around, that it would simply make the Islamic State vastly more popular, more effective, more belligerent. It would increase their territory, increase their manpower, increase their weaponry, benefit them in every possible way. When you bomb a religion, you make them stronger. That is not the way to attack a religious foe. You have to use words. You have to shed your ignorance and to be rational. So what happened? The Obamanator launched 1,000 bombing strikes on the Islamic State, and they expanded into additional cities plus 21 villages, and even the Kurds that we have rearmed succumb. So prior to bombing, the Islamic State had been pretty much status quo. They took over one of Assad's military bases. But other than the Assad military base, they went 3 or 4 weeks without a gain, just kind of retrenching. Then the Obamanator, based upon a bunch of propaganda from the Kurds who were just soliciting weapons, claimed that the sky was falling on the Yazidis, a bunch of Zoroastrians, and that they were all 100,000 of them up on a mountain about to be destroyed in genocidal rage by the Islamic State. Now, the Islamic State is bad, but it wasn't true. The United States dropped, you know, MREs and water and on humanitarian effort first, and then came in with the rescue team. And all they found up there was some shepherds who appreciated the MREs and the water. They're eating well. But the Kurds used it to solicit heavy arms from America. Then America decides that it's going to start bombing the Islamic State in Iraq. And so what does the Islamic State do? Well, it gains 21 more villages and 2 additional cities and whoops on the Kurds. The attack on the city of Ain al-Arab, known as Kobani in Kurdish, came 2 days after top U.S. military officers said that the Syrian opposition would probably need the help of the Syrian Kurds to defeat the Islamic State. Oh, boy, we are indeed desperate. Hello, Glenn. It's a strange and exciting day in the news. What do you think?
Hi, my name's Happy, and I live in a dwarf galaxy. We used to have a supermassive black hole, but we used a whole bunch of Metamucil and got it cleaned out, and now it's a snow white dwarf.
Okay, well, yes, I'm just so excited about the black hole. And, of course, my self-proclaimed genius here on our team wanted to know if there was a picture of it. I said, how do you shoot a picture of a black hole? Pictures require light. There is no light.
I know. I accidentally used a teaspoon of black hole instead of sugar in my coffee. Oh, man, I was burning for a week.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so here we have the Islamic State becoming more successful, gaining more territory, beating up on the Kurds, all after America decided to super arm the Kurds and to bomb the Islamic State. Worked out really well, didn't it? How do you like the plan so far?
Not so good. Not so good.
So with the United States planning to expand its military action against the Islamic State, because that's what we always do. Something doesn't work, and the right way to go, the next solution, is to do more of it. So you find something that doesn't work, and then you do it some more. That's kind of like how we played the Vietnam War. We found out things that didn't work, and we just repeated them. Well, we played the Iraq War and the Afghan War the same way, because it was the same idiots in our military. And now that we've lost both of those wars, the advice from the military is the same. Let's do all of that same stuff that we did that didn't work. So let's bomb them.
I'm hearing right-wingers, you know, say that, you know, if we were serious about this and really committed to it, you know, it could, like, it could be taken care of in short order. I'm like, I've heard this before somewhere. Where?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. We'll be in and out in a matter of weeks. Yeah, the... And particularly here now, this is not a country. The Islamic State, if the CIA is right, then America's response to the Islamic State was really stupid because a few months ago there were 10,000 of them, and they think there are 30,000 of them now, so they tripled in size once America declared war on them. So clearly that was not in our interest. That did not work. That was a really stupid idea. But let's just say there are 30,000 of them. America spends $1 billion between its military and its spying apparatus. And you want to tell me that it's going to take a prolonged action by America's military to wipe out a 30,000 fighters?
Right. Well, if you look to the prophets, you look to what Yahweh's prophets say about where this is going, and look at Ezekiel 38, okay, this is going to metastasize. Persia is going to be among the nations who come down against Israel. So the
Sunnis
are probably going to have to prevail for Persia to be part of the invading force.
Yeah, correct. We are going to fail, and $1 billion worth of annual spending on military and spy apparatus are not only going to be insufficient to wipe out the Islamic State, we are going to cause them to metastasize. We're going to increase them.